News Talk 850 WFTL presents Joyce Kaufman, No Restraint. Here's Joyce Kaufman.
On today's No Restraint podcast, I have so many things on my mind that I don't know where to begin. Podcast, that's probably not going to be possible this time. It's been one of those weekends, where I've had just so many things flooding my mind that I have to address all of them, or at least as many of them as I possibly can in this particular No Restraint podcast, which means I get to say what I really want to, no matter how controversial it is. I'm not afraid of being canceled. As a matter of fact, there are days when I wish that I was canceled, because it would be far less painful if I could go through life not paying attention and not scrutinizing all of the stuff that's going on in my beloved America today. But that's just not in the cards for me right now. So let me take you on this meandering journey with me as to what I've seen in the last week that has caused me such great consternation. And I'm sure for many of you, it's been exactly the same. First and foremost, unlike every other broadcaster who starts this conversation by saying, first and foremost, I wish to offer my condolences to all of the people affected by the shootings in Buffalo or the shootings in Laguna, California. While I do have incredible empathy and sympathy for the people who are affected by these tragedies, I think more than anything right now, I have an increasing fury at the politicians and the pundits who continue to pretend that the way out of this epidemic of violence that we're going through in the country, particularly among young people and old people, which is a fascinating dichotomy when you think about it, it really has nothing to do with the availability of guns. It has everything to do with the fact that Americans are frustrated, they're depressed, some of them are suicidal, and nobody cares about their mental health. Oh yeah, we make a big show. It's Mental Health Awareness Month, and let's pay attention to all of these problems, and we want to make sure there are plenty of hotlines for suicidal teenagers or for abandoned and hopeless old people. But really, that's a lot of lip service, because for the most part, people who are feeling terrible just keep it inside. They just bottle it up. And if they can't bottle it up anymore, they use drugs and alcohol to alleviate all of the pain and suffering that they're going through. Or they do something violent. They act out. It could be violence against themselves. Could be violence against their spouse or their children. It could be violence against total strangers. And what I've seen in the last week is this wanton violence at what would presumably be total strangers, sometimes based on a hateful ideology, sometimes based on a simple inability to feel. Psychopaths don't feel like the rest of us. And I think to a great extent, what we've seen is a lot of psychopathic behavior coming back to haunt us. Now, why do I say coming back to haunt us? Well, I think because of the propensity of the human being to commit violent acts out of anger and frustration, and then to be forgiven of those acts, gives us the wrong idea about our personal responsibility. Now, don't get me wrong. I am a great believer in forgiveness. As a matter of fact, I'm a Christian, because I'm so sure that forgiveness is actually part of God's plan for each one of us. But along with forgiveness, or actually in anticipation of forgiveness, comes repentance, comes an understanding that what we've done is wrong, or what we're thinking of doing is wrong. And therefore, we're supposed to be sorry. We're supposed to have some feeling before we act or after we act that includes a repentant spirit. But I don't see that in a lot of people. Instead, I see frustrated, angry people who justify every act with some sort of, I don't know, banal reference to their pain. We're all going through pain. Many of us lost loved ones during the last couple of years, some to a virus that we didn't understand, some to loneliness, which we did understand, and some to natural causes. But nonetheless, those sorrows have been sort of stifled. Many people couldn't even go to funerals or services for their loved ones, and that does affect you. Many young people were deprived of opportunities where they'd be in a social setting, where they'd have to learn how to accept other people, even how to care for other people, even how to love other people. And we deprived them of that. And they sat in their rooms, in their basements, in their parents' homes, looking at vile and hateful things online. And some of it was masquerading as schoolwork. When I think of all of the people who have been oblivious to the fact that there are teachers within America's school systems, public school systems these days, that think it's appropriate to coerce your child into some sort of sexual acting out or some sort of gender neutrality or even gender fluidity or gender dysphoria, all of these terms that for the most part, young teenagers really didn't have to wrestle with, never mind wrestle with in the privacy of their own bedroom, being lectured by teachers who can't figure out their own gender preference or their own identity. We see case after case of teachers telling children, well, if you feel like a boy, even though you were born a girl, maybe you are a boy, and gender is a social construct and not a real thing. Well, I don't know. I've had two children. One was a boy and one was a girl, and it was quite obvious right at their birth which one was which. I don't know what the gender fluidity gene is and how you would spot it in an infant. Now I got teachers trying to tell these same kids, not my kids anymore, but now my grandkids, that maybe it was an error on the part of the doctor or their parents in assigning a sexual identity to them, that they had no right to do that, and that they should be able to choose whatever they think they are. They could pick their pronouns. What is that all about? I mean, I didn't even know that they still use the term pronouns in schools, since grammar seems to be out. You go online and you look at what people are writing. They don't learn cursive. So I don't know. Pronouns seem pretty irrelevant. They, them, him, her, she, it. I don't know. It makes no difference to me. Calling someone a Ms. or a mix, or calling someone a Hispanic or a Latinx, or calling somebody anything. When I was growing up, if you called a person anything other than their name, you better be ready to have a fight. I cannot imagine what 15 or 16 or 17-year-old is going through right now, trying to figure out how to get along in a world when they've been basically given a bad message for the last 3 years, and in some instances being preached to by people who are incapable of teaching, never mind preaching. So I was thinking about how it's affected my own world and my own life. I know that years ago, when there was the advent of social media, I, like any other communicator, was super excited. It gave me yet another tool. I can reach people each day over the airwaves. And then all of a sudden, I was able to reach them on a YouTube video. And I watched videos that I had produced, or actually had just starred in and other people had produced, get viral and have hundreds of thousands of views. And I thought, this is a whole new world. And I was enthusiastic and excited about it, even though I didn't participate as much as others did. Part of the reason was it was still kind of an unknown frontier, and I wasn't quite sure if we were handling it responsibly. And as time has gone on, I've decided we have done anything but handle it responsibly. It's like being in the Wild West with your six shooter and shooting at anything that moves. Which brings me to one of the other things that happened this weekend that really disturbed me, because it was so predictable. There were these dramatic shootings, and as I said before, of course our sympathy are with the victims and their families. But why do we have to preface every discussion about it with that statement? It's one thing for the politicians to say it, or even for the police and fire rescue guys and ATF and FBI to say it. But why do we in the pundit class, why do we who are supposed to be either reporting on the news or analyzing the news or breaking down the news, why do we feel this compulsion to tell you how sorry we are? Of course, anybody with a normal psychology and a decent heart is very sorry for the people who are affected by this. But it stops us from having the real conversation that we don't seem to be ready to have. When I looked at what happened in Buffalo, New York, and I started to put the pieces together, because little by slowly they were giving more information out on the television, on the radio, on the internet, and I was beginning to piece together some of this information, of course, the first thing I said to myself was, here they go. The gun grabbers are coming. They have a great story to run with, and run with it they will. And then the second thought I had was, but it was New York. In New York, it's not that easy to get a gun. Now, granted, upstate New York, it's a little easier, certainly, than in New York City, but it's not an easy state to have a gun in. It's just not. There's all kinds of requirements. And I found it fascinating that all anybody could talk about was the fact that this 18-year-old had a gun, had a racist ideology, had a hatred for black people, and went and shot a bunch of people in a supermarket. Like the gun had some sort of mind of its own, or like this kid was able to get that gun because gun laws are so lax in New York. That's just not true. And he did obtain the guns legally. And here's the really interesting part. Once again, the authorities knew this kid was in trouble. They knew this kid had threatened at his high school to literally shoot him up at graduation or shortly thereafter. On what planet, in what state, in what county, in what world would that not be the kind of red flag that says, let's make sure that this young man doesn't get his hands on a gun anytime in the future? At certainly anytime in the near future, until maybe his hormones settle down and maybe someone confronts what appears to be a very sick personality. But no, that's not what happened. Much like in the Nicholas Cruz case, no matter how many times the authorities and the FBI in particular were alerted to his mad rantings and ravings and his obsession with weapons and shooting as many people as possible and wreaking havoc wherever he went, even before he picked up that gun and shot all those innocent people at the high school in Parkland, Florida. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. Will we ever forget that day? I know I won't, because I had to run out there. And already I knew that this was going to be a horror story and that it was all going to come down to gun control. It actually launched David Hogg and other people who are obsessed with gun control. But nobody wanted to talk about the fact that the shooter had had numerous encounters with authorities. But they had kept saying, well, we don't want to put him in a situation where he doesn't get any help. And we understand that there's some deep-seated psychological problems. And oh my goodness, let's be as nice as we can and not mark him with some sort of red letter so that he'll have trouble in the future. So instead, they just kept passing him along from one program back to his regular high school, back to a program, back to his regular high school, psychologists, psychiatrists, everybody, friends, family members, everybody was alerted to his madness. There's no other way to describe it. And yet, he was able to get guns. Now, here in the state of Florida, it's pretty simple. You have to do certain things, pass a background check. You have to buy it legally, otherwise you're in violation of the law. But it's even harder in New York, where this madman, young man, literally walked into a supermarket 3 hours away from his home. I mean, Nicholas Cruz could walk to the site of his shooting. He knew the people there. But this young man just had this blind hatred. And he went in, found a place where apparently he figured there'd be a lot of black people. And that was the subject of his rage. I've heard a couple of different stories. He was mad about the Waukesha Christmas parade. He just didn't like black people. Who knows? Some people are already making him into some sort of white supremacist, with a reputation. I don't know. I just know that he had threatened to shoot people in high school. The authorities knew about it, and yet somehow he was not only able to get a gun, but nobody was watching his behaviors. I mean, they tracked every January 6th person from the time they, put a MAGA hat on their head until they got home from the rally. And they can tell you exactly where they went and who they talked to and all their social media accounts. They threw them in jail. Some of them have been in jail for over a year. But nobody was tracking either Nicholas or this kid as they conducted really reconnaissance missions trying to figure out how they could hurt as many people as possible. I find that unfathomable. It's one thing when it's a surprise attack like Sandy Hook was, when really the only people who knew how disturbed that man was were his mother and, maybe his father. I don't know, a handful of people, maybe one psychologist. But these others, the authorities have been alerted on them, and yet somehow they managed to just go through, get their weapon, and then launch attacks. And then we all stand around going, oh my God, it's the gun. No, it's not the gun. It never was the gun. As a matter of fact, it really makes the case for citizens like me being armed. I trust that if I had been anywhere near that Tops supermarket in Buffalo, and despite the fact that it was located in a neighborhood which was predominantly black, I shop in supermarkets in predominantly black neighborhoods right here in Florida. I'm sure you do too. So anybody, and there were some white people shot as well, could have been in that supermarket. And had they been armed, then maybe that security guard, who apparently was the only person with a gun in that entire supermarket, maybe they could have stopped this lunatic before he shot more people. I have to believe that. And it's one of the reasons that I am armed and that I go to places like a supermarket carrying my weapon. I have a concealed weapons permit. I know how to use my gun. I know how to secure my gun. But I also know that if I'm in a supermarket one day and I hear a gunshot, I'm first and foremost going to find out where it's coming from. And if there's a shooter that needs to be neutralized, I'm volunteering. That's what I'm trained to do. The idea that these states and these areas like Laguna prohibits people from being armed is a real good explanation of why you have a mass shooting occurring there probably more frequently than in places where people are carrying guns. And mind you, in places where people have open carry, there are very few mass shootings. That's just the reality. Why not go somewhere where nobody can stop you if your intent is to do as much harm as possible? And I have to believe that in the Buffalo case and in the Laguna case, the intent was to do some harm. We still don't know enough about the church shooting. We do know that it was an Asian man, an older man in his 60s, and that it was a Taiwanese-American congregation. So it could have been some romantic involvement. It could have been some argument. We really don't know yet. We'll find out. But we know exactly what the young man who walked into that top supermarket after shooting four people on his way in, killing three of them, we do know what he says was on his mind. Apparently, a manifesto outlines what was on his mind. Apparently, carving words into the barrel of his gun tells us what was on his mind. Apparently, visiting websites that are notoriously anti-Semitic, anti-black, let's call it what it is. Racist websites on a frequent basis tells us pretty much what we need to know about his mindset. Okay, That doesn't make every white person who owns a gun a white supremacist, a racist, a person who wants to do what he did. As a matter of fact, doesn't make any of us what he did. He is a unique individual with a very serious mental illness and a vicious side that most of us don't possess. So I am so tired of every time there's a shooting of this type that the discussion immediately turns to how people like me should not support guns, should not own guns, should not have the right to have a gun. You know, the one thing that I've said all along, and I do maintain this, whenever a government is trying to take away the guns of its citizens, there's only one reason they do that. It's because they're planning on doing something to those citizens which would make them want to shoot the government. And I'm not giving my gun up. I'm just not. And believe me, I don't sit in wait of the authorities, but I do know there are bad guys all over the place. I'm a person who goes into the jails to do prison ministry. So trust me, I have a great love and a great understanding of what causes people to do terrible things. And yet, I also understand that they're not going to do terrible things to me because I have the ability to stop them. And that doesn't mean I'm a lunatic who's going to go around shooting people because I don't like the way they look at me. The people who do that get guns illegally. People like me jump through all the legal hoops, get the proper training, know how to secure our weapons, have the mindset that tells us this weapon is for self-defense. This weapon does not launch attacks. This weapon stops attacks. And that's why I say I look at these instances, and as a person who co-pastors a church in Fort Lauderdale with my husband, let me tell you something. Anybody who's thinking that they could walk into our church and gun down a bunch of, congregants, better think twice, because the people inside of that church, our church, are armed. And you don't know which ones of them are armed, but they're not just armed, they're trained. And they are going to neutralize any shooter very quickly. They're positioned properly. They have the right kind of weapon. Everybody else has been trained and had a drop to the floor. Believe me, there are no reasons, good reasons, for innocent people to be shot in a house of worship, because any pastor worth his salt, any administrator of a church, large or small, who doesn't have an armed person ready, more than one, but at least a single armed person ready and able to stop, to neutralize a shooter, isn't a very good shepherd, isn't taking care of their congregation. Now, mind you, the church in Laguna, the people are not allowed to be armed, not in that area of the country, and certainly not in that church. So guess what? They still neutralize the shooter, because people are capable of stopping the bad guys if they have the support of other people. And that's what happened. They jumped him and they hogtied him. Now, I think they should all be given, medals for what they did. But part of me still wonders if one of those same people who had to subdue him physically had a weapon and been trained in how to use it, would more people have been saved? Would they have been able to stop him sooner? Even if there was only one fatality, there were four critically injured people and a fifth injured. Could that have been prevented by having people who were armed and trained in how to use those arms? Look, it's been predictable, all of the reaction. It's the same old story. Every time we're looking at one thing, like the magician with the shiny thing in his right hand, the real magic or the real trick is happening in his left hand. And don't you get the feeling the government does that? That while we're busy watching how all bets are off when it comes to protesting in front of judges' homes. Now, mind you, this is the most sacred part of our whole republic. We have three branches of government, the executive branch, we have the legislative branch, and then we have the judiciary. And that's sacrosanct. You get a lifetime appointment to something like the Supreme Court because you're untouchable. You're allowed to make very important decisions based on your interpretation of the Constitution. At no point should the citizenry be allowed to assault you, either in your home or bother your family. This is the kind of stuff that will render the Supreme Court incapable of doing what it's there for. And that makes me very sad. But again, this is what happens when we stop having conversations about any of these issues, when everything is a soundbite, when one minute we're looking at a leaked draft, and the next minute we're looking at a protest, and the next minute we're looking at the war in Ukraine and a $40 billion package being sent over there, and the next minute we're looking at the border and counting down the days until we know all bets are off and the borders are going to be stormed by people we have no way of vetting, no way of even counting. And then we get a shooting or two shootings, and the people's minds are spinning. And I get it. On top of all that, they got to go to the supermarket and look for their Similac to feed their baby. And there is none. There's none. People are more worried in this country right now, or appear to be more worried. I don't believe they are. But people appear to be more worried whether or not you can abort a baby than whether you can feed a baby. We have a government that's very enthusiastic about challenging and changing the opinion of the Supreme Court justices, five of them who look like they're going to overturn the constitutionality of Roe v. Wade, not make abortion illegal, my friends, not make contraception illegal, my friends. There's nothing about that in that draft, but simply addresses the constitutionality of a right to privacy as a reason to allow abortion on a national level. It's long overdue. And yet here we are. We cannot have a conversation about this. We dig in our heels on both sides and we refuse to discuss it. And then we applaud one side if they act violently in protest, and we tell the other side if they act peacefully in protest, as they did on January 6th, that they are terrorists. We tell parents at school board meetings that they are terrorists. But if you go protest outside of Amy Coney Barrett's house, you're a hero. It's upside down. And that's why 18-year-olds go stark raving mad and take weapons and shoot innocent people or learn to hate people. Do you think critical race theory is helping to end racism, or is it fueling the worst kind of racism? Is it telling white people and young white people that they're all bad and they're all racist, and then some of them are actually stepping up to the plate and proving them right? I don't know the answer to that question, and you probably don't either, but it's sure worth discussing. Only there's no place to discuss it. And unless Elon Musk actually goes through with purchasing Twitter and taking it private, there may never be a public square again. We may never have civil conversations, and we may not even have a Supreme Court where these things can be assessed after the legislative branch takes care of business. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm at one of those turning points in my own life where I'm seeing that where we're going is straight to hell. And where we're coming from is a country that was built on all kinds of wonderful sound principles. How did that happen? What do we do now? Thanks for listening to the No Restraint Podcast.